Viva la huelga! Long live the strike! So goes the battle cry of Cesar Chavez and his ragtag army of militant migrants. Tonight, a look into the thoughts and the moods, the fears and the dreams of the participants. This is Jim Zalian reporting for KABC. There are Negroes and Filipinos and Puerto Ricans and Okies in Cesar Chavez's army. There are clergymen and college students. But it is essentially a revolution that speaks with a Spanish accent. Chavez, Valdez, Huerta, those are the names. Huelga, Esquirol, Basta, the slogans. And the weapons are picket lines and infiltrators and boycotts.
And then there's music, there's songs. The strike songs that have emerged from our struggle.
Someone once said, beware of a movement with a song. The farm worker strikers in Delano have many songs, and they are distinctly Mexican in flavor. To understand what is happening in Delano, you must first know something of the character of its people. Delano is one of scores of farm communities that dot the landscape in the San Joaquin Valley, America's richest agricultural area. Farms in the valley can cost $2,000 and $3,000 per acre and more. A man who has built a 5,000-acre vineyard in Delano is running a $10 to $15 million enterprise. But he still gets up in the morning, puts on his khakis and boots, and goes out to attend the home place. Like the Mexican who works for him, he's usually a first-generation American. His people came from Europe. He'll tell you he's Italian or Armenian or Yugoslav.
This is something in our blood. My father was a farmer, his father was a farmer before him, and this is our love. Every vine that we own here, we planted. And this is our soil, this is our life. I was up this morning early, and till 11 o'clock I was under the vines, counting the berries, counting the vines. This is a love that we have.
No matter how hard he tries, rancher Jack Pendle cannot see himself as the union tries to depict him. His mind and his memory are of a childhood working with his immigrant dad to tear a living from the once arid soil of Delano. Of his thoughts of college and his decision instead to go to work on the land. Jack Pendle cannot think of himself as a rich landowner who has built a virtual empire. But then, neither can Jose Zapata.
I remember I was, but I guess, 4 years old, 5 years old, when my brother's taking me over there to the school, you know, and he wanted me to learn something out there. My brother said, I'm quiet all day, and then not even to go into the school, you know. He'd be outside of school. And then I never did win anymore, you know. And I get to grow, and now I help my daddy.
There is something poignant about the separate worlds of Jack Pendle and Jose Zapata. Rancher Pendle is stunned by the fact the viejo, the old man, has joined up with those union organizers.
It's a mental attitude that we're dealing with here. Just the fact that it seems to me that one of his workers, after working with him for 20 years, all of a sudden lays down his equipment and comes to the edge of the field and begins to shout, huelga at him. This shakes the whole foundation, the whole reason for being, you know, and it even goes into, I think, you know, in some cases, even to the growers interpret this as a challenge to their own manhood.
What has happened in Delano? Whatever it is, it could just as easily as happened in Visalia or Pixley or Sanger or Madera or any of the other 1,000 farm towns in Central California. But destiny chose Delano as the battleground. For more than 40 years, these campesinos, these field workers, have been loyal and hardworking and either disinterested or afraid of labor organizations. Today, several thousand of them have paid dues, pledged loyalty to La Huelga, and have gone on strike. To date, the ranchers have had workers enough to plow their vineyards and prune their vines and irrigate their fields and pick their grapes. But will it continue?
We have never had a walkout. We never had any disturbance in our own operation, our fields. And our men seem to be content, happy. The wages are good. Working conditions have been good. We have changed nothing since inception. So we can't see anything but improvements because the contracts that Chavez has here are nothing. They're just nothing but a piece of paper.
Again, the voice of the rancher, bravely confident that his Mexicans will go on working for him if only those agitators would get out. positive that the hot valley sun will go on ripening the crops and that Delano will be like it used to be once again. Besides, he'll tell you, a farm isn't a factory. Unions are for the cities. A strike at an auto plant simply stops production. Strike a farmer, and in 3 days, his crop is gone. Make him pay excessive wages, and everyone loses.
But when the point comes that, let's just get way far out. Let's say that everything that I do in the field, I've got to pay $3.50 an hour. Unless I get more for my product, it stands to reason that the grapes are coming out. Because I would rather make $15 an acre growing barley than lose $150 growing grapes. I don't give a damn about the grapes. I'm in business to try to make a profit.
That was rancher John Bree. He runs one of the biggest farming operations in Delano. His father and his father's father pioneered that land. Just east of Delano, there's a young woman named Mary Covarrubias. She proudly tells you her family went on welfare only once.
I just finished the junior high up to the eighth grade. Well, I didn't go to high school because we couldn't afford it. You know, I had to go to work because we're only five girls, and two of them were married. So I just, you know, there's another older sister, and we're three and single, and the other one, she was too small, so I had to go to work. And I didn't go to high school. Yeah, I wish I could have finished high school, college, and, you know, get a good job and good education. I hope if I get married, have children, and they finish high school, have all the education that, you know, their son of the growers have.
So Mary Covarrubias looks across Highway 99 as she and her fellow strikers think of the ranchers with their 500 acres or their 5,000 acres and puts into perspective a part of what it's all about. Though the Delano story is complex in many ways, it has an almost classic simplicity when you look at it as a battle between the haves and have-nots. And the growers will tell you the locals, the Mexicans who have lived there and worked there all these years, never had ideas like this before.
Our employees seem to be relatively happy. They seem to be making a decent wage. They seem to be willing to stay with us through all sorts of harassments, not only in our fields, but in their own homes. They, by and large, disagree with most of the principles that Mr. Chavez espouses.
The San Joaquin Valley rancher has always taken care of his workers, he'll tell you. There are times during the year when the vines are dormant, the irrigating's done, but a loyal employee comes out to the ranch house and asks if there's some work he can do. And some of the ranchers will create a job for the day. Chavez, the rancher will tell you, hasn't sold those Mexicans his bill of goods.
It has a lot to do with paternalism. Before the employer came by, the worker was dying of thirst, he would say, "I'm a thirsty patron." And whatever ailed him, you know, or hurt him, he would never complain. Now when he comes back, and then they use, although they would want the union, they would want more money, they'll never tell him. And he keeps believing these things. You know, it's really a world of fantasy.
Perhaps what Cesar Chavez calls a world of fantasy is really a breakdown of communications, a failure of farmer and farm worker to understand what the other is trying to say. Rancher John Bree, for instance, is frankly convinced that his Mexican field hands have no sense of mañana, at least some of them. That no matter how much they make, they will spend it as quickly as they get it.
If I were to pay my employees $2.50 an hour for 6 months of the year, they would starve 6 months of the year. It's that simple.
If you paid them $5 an hour, would that still hold true?
They would starve 6 months of the year.
Why?
Because they're going to spend it. They're going to spend it.
One of the first things Cesar Chavez did when he started the union in Delano was to open a credit union. Aware that many Mexican families have to go on welfare during the winter months, Chavez says he hopes for the day when that will end. A rancher, meanwhile, says Chavez is simply interested in foisting shiftless workers on him. A rancher wants to pick his own employees and to be able to fire them if they don't perform.
So I've got men out there today will make $4.50 an hour. It's hard work, and the men are not lazy. They're good workers, but they're making good wages. We are rewarding them for their ability to do the job and for the willingness to do this work. But we cannot, under no circumstances, tolerate lazy, worthless people with the inability, or I should say, with the lack of want to accomplish anything.
Farm work in Central California is often done on the incentive system. While a minimum wage is paid, many ranchers have a bonus system. The more a man or woman or child produces in the field, the more they'll make. Other farm jobs are paid for strictly on an hourly basis. If an older worker falls behind while chopping cotton by the hour, he may have to be discharged.
Well, right now we got a man who's around 62 years old right now, and to him it's hard because he's too old and sometimes he gets out there. He stays behind, we got to help him and help him out. But if somebody is between 15 like me or young, well, he could do the job. But people like, yeah, you know, old already, they, you know, they can keep up to the people, but sometimes when it's hard, stays behind, we got to help him. That's the only difference, you know. The job is easy. You know, for me it's easy, but somebody's old already, then it's too hard for them.
How much money can you make chopping cotton?
Well, they pay us $1.40, work 9 hours. Plus, they take $3.60 out of your check for Social Security. So we make, if I work all week, 9 hours, I can make $60.
When Cesar Chavez first shouted huelga in 1965 and the Delano grape strike began, the Bracero was still with us. But the day of the Bracero was ending, and no single event has had more to do with Chavez's gains so far. So long as massive numbers of foreign workers could be brought in, no domestic labor union stood a chance of organizing California's field workers. Some aliens can still come across the border to work. They're called green carders. Their cards permit them to cross over and take certain jobs. There are also some imported Puerto Ricans in Delano, but mostly the only available workforce is now made up of U.S. citizens. One of the ironies of this third summer of the strike is that California growers were not long ago saying they could not survive if the Bracero program ended. Congress ended it. There are no more Braceros, but the work is still being done, obviously by Americans. Meanwhile, rancher Martin Zaninovich wants to make it clear he doesn't think there's a strike in Delano.
We don't have a strike here. We have an organizational effort going on. We've continued to do all of the farm work, and there's plenty of people available to do our work. Our crews are in the field today even, and I expect that they will be in the field throughout this year.
If Congress, 30 years ago, had included farm workers under the protective umbrella of the National Labor Relations Act, Delano might today still be nothing more than one of the many farm towns that line Highway 99. The NLRA guarantees workers in other industries the right to petition for union representation. Farm workers do not have that right. Thus, Cesar Chavez must go to the growers and ask them if they'll allow an election, or he must bring pressure, pickets, boycotts, strikes, slowdowns. So far, only corporations with brand-name products or wineries whose trade brands could be easily boycotted by organized labor have acceded to the demands. No independent family corporation has as yet broken ranks in Delano, as Cesar Chavez is painfully aware.
If that ever happens, it's going to be our first big break. Mm-hmm. Because, see, if at such a point a grower picks up enough courage to deal with his convictions, then I think that it is the most powerful weapon that we would have.
Meanwhile, the determined huelguistas, the strikers, continue to knock off the DiGiorgio and the Shenley and the Christian Brother-type firms whose vineyards are a minor part of their operations. So their workers are now unionized. Delano ranchers will tell you the men aren't happy with the union, but then the union tells you they are. Some ranchers, like John Bree, remain bitter that the big brand-name firms broke ranks.
The employees were sold down the river by Shenley. They were sold down the river by I don't want to mention names. They were sold down the river by practically everybody that signed the contract. Whether or not they had an election or not has nothing to do with it.
Bree is convinced the payrolls were padded and that ineligible voters swung the Shenley and the DiGiorgio elections to the union. Rancher Zaninovich takes a more charitable view.
I think that firms like that can, with their personnel and their large office staffs scattered around, are better equipped to cope with unions and and higher costs and operating possibly at losses where a family-owned operation, which is strictly geared only to an agricultural enterprise, certainly has to stay on the plus side or the profit side or go out of business.
Just last week, a number of other major California ranching corporations agreed to allow elections. And the Teamsters Union confirmed that it would end its efforts to organize field workers in competition with Chavez. That jurisdictional agreement, whereby Chavez will keep hands off the men who drive field machines and trucks and who work in the sheds, was a major victory for Chavez, for it leaves the field workers to him. Some say some other union may sense the vacuum and move in, but that isn't considered too likely. The AFL-CIO backs Chavez, and there are few independents big enough to take on the AFL-CIO. United Farm Workers Organizing Committee Chief Negotiator Dolores Huerta comments.
There, of course, exists one other possibility, and I think this we can expect. It's already happened in the past, and I'm sure will happen again in the future, that the employers will try to form company unions and scab union groups. They tried one here in Delano called the Kern Tulare Independent Farm Workers Union, which was composed of labor contractors, and I'm sure that they will try to use this as a last resort to form company unions.
There are many other elements to the Delano story. There is, for instance, the whispered implication that communists are behind the whole movement. We had expected tonight to be able to report on Senator Hugh Byrne's California Un-American Activities Subcommittee report. It was supposed to be released this month. It was supposed to contain damaging information. Our sources in Sacramento tell us the report is under lock and key. Apparently, we are told, the subcommittee's writer was unable this year to produce a first draft that the senators were willing to sign. Feverish rewrites have been ordered, but according to the word from Sacramento, the report still is not ready for release. There have been many efforts to brand Chavez Union as communist. The last group to imply it was the John Birch Society in its American Opinion magazine. The society flatly called Chavez's chief co-organizer, Larry Itliong, a communist.
I have never been a communist member. I don't intend to be one. And I have no reason to be one.
Itliong, by the way, has filed a $2 million libel suit against the Birch Society. Early in the strike, many student activists came to Delano to take part in the movement. Some had been members of various civil rights and socialist movements, members of SNCC and CORE and similar organizations. Most of them stayed a while and then left. One rancher said Walter Reuther of the AFL-CIO came to Delano, saw the long-haired college girls and the bearded beatniks there surrounding Chavez, and then Reuther left town. The next day, the bearded and the offbeat volunteers were gone. Cesar Chavez's brother, Richard, is unruffled when someone says there are communists running the union.
People use this term very loosely, you know, and there is no truth in it whatsoever, no truth at all, you know. This is, most of the people involved in this thing are, I would say, 90-95% of them are Catholics, and they don't know what they're saying when they say communism. You get mad at somebody, that's the easiest word to call somebody, but they have never been able to prove nothing because there's nothing to prove, and there's no bearing to it, really.
Cesar Chavez himself sees it in a slightly different light.
If you really translate what they're trying to say, this makes it very difficult. My interpretation is that, and this is the saddest part of it, is that they're saying that those who red bait us are saying that, first of all, they're saying that only the communists care for human suffering and for social injustice. They're saying also only the communists can do it. And this hurts more than the attack because, no one political philosophy has the sole claim to it. Christians can feel for their fellow man, you know, as well as anybody else. And I think that Christians can also be just as motivated, if not more, to do something about it.
Christians, it turns out, have played a far larger role in Delano these past 2 years than most people realize. First, there are the Protestant migrant ministers, like the Reverend Jim Drake, who serves full-time now as Cesar Chavez's administrative aide. And he's much criticized by the growers and by the local Delano clergymen for having taken sides.
they have their problems just like I have mine, and their problems are that the growers own their churches. Nobody owns the church, and that's the way I see it. And so I think I can be true to what I feel to be my calling, and that is to identify with the people that are oppressed.
Ranchers like Jack Pantle get almost apoplectic when they see men of the cloth helping the strikers.
But when you get a man, a minister, who's supposed to take an oath of this fairness, then come out here and make these kind of statements and these kind of tactics, I think this is wrong. And I think the church will have to stand up if there is a judgment day to ever come. I think this is the first thing that St. Peter's going to ask him. Why?
Grower Pantle is a Roman Catholic. Rancher John Bree is Protestant. Bree is frankly dumbfounded when he hears of a clergyman joining in a boycott against someone's product in sympathy with the farm union.
For the life of me, being a church man and rather an active member in more ways than one in the church, I can't understand the thinking of church leaders who participate in this kind of a boycott, because I don't think it's Christian.
Christianity, of course, comes in all sizes and shapes. Migrant minister Drake, a Protestant, is unabashedly proud of the Catholic church leaders from Stockton and San Francisco who've tried to get the growers and the union together.
A priest who responds to these workers, to these courageous people here, has to be a courageous sort of priest and come up with something courageous in the church. And so a whole new religious structure is actually being born along in the process of the strike. There's a revolution taking place in the church in this valley right now.
Delano insiders know that the Catholic Church made it possible for the Chavez Union to organize at the church-operated Christian Brothers Winery without trouble. It is believed the Catholic Church also had a lot to do with the announcement last week that some new firms were going to allow elections in their fields. But the independent growers of Delano, most of them as Catholic as their Mexican workers, harbor a resentment of the activities of certain members of the church hierarchy in Northern California. Bill Pirelli Minetti, whose own fields were organized not by Chavez but by the Teamsters, makes that clear.
Many ministers have come to Delano, clergymen of all denominations, but have not really taken a good academic look at things. For example, a number of clergymen have publicly supported Chavez's position. In our own case, relative to us, and yet had never called on this company, had never spoken to any individual connected with it, had no information other than that which they were supplied by the UFWAC.
UFWAC, of course, being the Chavez Group, the United Farm Workers Organizing Committee. This is one of the world's great radio stations, KABC, 79 on your dial, people-to-people radio in Los Angeles. Some people ask, if the Chavez Union is successful, how would negotiations be held? How can a union deal with thousands of independent farmers? The answer, of course, is that farmers would have to form associations, just as lumbermen and canners and shipping companies have done, to bargain with labor on an industry-wide basis. Meanwhile, as Delano enters the third summer of its date with agricultural destiny, the battle lines blur. The brand-name firms with vineyard holdings are, one by one, signing up. The independents, though they may be growers and packers and shippers and brokers, continue to hold the line. When you go to Delano, you have a choice. Drive east off Highway 99 and you enter the Anglo world of the ranchers and the businessmen and the teachers and the city employees. You turn west and you enter the world of the campesino, the field worker. Reverend Jim Drake sees Highway 99 as more than a physical thing. He sees it in abstract.
There's this wide band of cement to make sure that it's clear that there is a division. I think that the difference in thinking on the two sides of the highway is just as solid as that highway itself. You can find very concrete differences. For instance, on the east side of town, the churches are well established. They're the mainline Protestant denominational churches where the clergy very clearly identify with the growers, and you can see the growers' identification marks on the churches and on the personalities of the ministers.
Migrant Minister Drake thinks the time is near when not only the Delano preachers, but the business and the civic leaders of the town are going to have to quit siding with the growers. He saw what he thinks is a sign of the future when Chavez recently bought 40 arid acres of land west of Delano to build a farm workers' clinic and a co-op gas station, and one day, he hopes, an international farm workers' headquarters.
When we dedicated this land, we asked the priest, who had been so much criticized in the community for not participating in the strike, criticized by the farm workers, we asked him to come out from his church here in Delano and participate in the blessing of the land. And lo and behold, he did so. So I think that that's the beginning of a new day in Delano. I think Delano sees that one of two things is going to happen. Either we're going to live together, we're going to make a new city out of this, I think it can be a beautiful city, or farm workers are just going to secede from the city. They're going to build their own service stations, their own clinics, they're going to build their own housing, and they're going to just leave that other place to rot. So the future is up to the city fathers now. If they want to come along, they can. Otherwise, they're going to get left behind.
Wherever you go in Delano, you get the feeling that the optimism is with the strikers now. Chavez himself shuns optimism. He says any false step now can kill or cripple his movement. He's exceedingly worried about the farm worker strike in Rio Grande Valley, where the Texas Rangers have allegedly been rough on farm workers. He admits the Texas situation is a drain on him.
Yes, very much so. Money, time, anxiety, you know, creates here among the leadership. That one is a very difficult situation. We've got the police and the courts are conspiring against the workers, against the union. So it's most difficult. It's difficult enough when you have the police against you. And then there's always the hope that you go to the courts and you'll have some remedy there. But in Texas, even that hope is gone, unless we go to the federal courts.
Who is Cesar Chavez? What is his background? Born in Yuma, Arizona, the son of migrant farm workers, he attended 34 different schools by the eighth grade. And soon thereafter, he was in the Navy. Discharged, he returned for a time to the fields, married a Delano girl, then migrated to the canneries in Northern California. In that area, he met a man who saw organizational abilities in Chavez. So Chavez was hired to organize for the Community Services Organization. And soon he was executive director of CSO with a big salary. He asked the CSO directors if he could try to organize farm workers. Told no by those directors, Chavez quit CSO and, with his wife Helen and five children, moved to Delano to go it alone.
We had some savings when he worked for the CSO. I saved some money. And we used that up while he was organizing. I used to do field work, and then things got pretty bad where I had to go and do field work all the time in order to support the family, because he couldn't work and organize at the same time. Even though sometimes we had the office there at the house, there was times when we'd close, you know, the office in the morning. We'd go to work, pick peas or different things that we found that, you know, were available, and we'd work, and then we'd come back at noon and open up the office and take care of our members.
Well, that was in 1962. The first few union members were served by the Chavezes, helping them to fill out forms, teaching them to avoid big interest contracts when they bought something, helping them with language problems. Very few people signed up with the union at first. Chavez says most were afraid they'd be fired from their jobs if they did. Usually, a wife would join first, and then her husband would come down to the office on Albany Street to take out his union membership. Some were put on picket duty on roadsides along the ranches. Others continued working so they'd be eligible to vote if Chavez could get an election. Still others were sent into the barrios, the neighborhoods, to urge reluctant families to join La Huelga. At first, there was little money in the union treasury, but sympathetic big city donors were soon sending cash donations. After Chavez had merged his independent union with Larry Itliong's AFL-CIO, United Farm Workers Organization, the AFL-CIO itself began pouring funds in. That was the point at which the strike had begun. Each striker was then given a $5 a week allowance for incidentals. Food came from a storage house stocked by donations from other unions and from individuals. Filipino Hall became a kitchen where the huelguistas could stop for tortillas and beans. And suddenly both Delano and the nation realized there was indeed a serious farm labor movement going on in California. To many, Cesar Chavez is a saint. a charismatic leader who preached and practiced nonviolence, who admired Gandhi, who had come home to the vineyards to lead his people to safety. Rancher Martin Zaninovich, like the other growers, sees Chavez in a slightly different light.
I look upon Cesar Chavez as a opportunist. I think he's he is not as interested in unionization and in I think improving wage and working conditions of farm workers as maybe he is in a broader thing, a more revolutionary type of thinking. I think he tends to be more of a civil rights advocate than a true union man.
The irony of it is that Rancher Zaninovich is right. There is a movement going on among the Mexicans of Delano, and it is more of a social revolution than a strict organizational effort for unionism. The key to that revolutionary movement can be found in some of the people around Chavez. Not the migrant ministers or the committed college students, but people like Dolores Huerta, who found her way back to her origins in the fields of Delano after 2 years of college and government service. And people like Luis Valdez. Born in Delano, Luis Valdez and his brother were taken to San Jose as teenagers by their field worker parents. There, the brothers found their way to college. That brother is a government physicist now, and Luis Valdez is back home in Delano. He's suspect. As a college student, Valdez went to Cuba to see Castro's revolution. He and the other students knew they'd be defying State Department wishes if they went.
So we went and discovered many things, good and bad things. We made our own judgments. And this is actually the basis, you know, for them calling that I was brainwashed or trained or something. I was there 2 months, during which time we were so busy touring all over the island. We were actually tourists, political tourists, and naive political tourists at that.
Why naive?
Well, because we were students. We were idealistic, wanting to believe in the successful revolution of people trying to better themselves, and yet I think lacking a real understanding of what it really takes, which is hard work and a lot of sacrifice.
Among the Yugoslav growers of Delano, there's a thing called racial pride. They speak with deep admiration of their parents' homeland, and they identify with it. Ask them what they are, and they say Yugoslav. Though born in the United States, the roots of their personal egos and identities are still entwined with those of their immigrant parents. The same is true of the Italians, who have remained vineyardists as their fathers and their grandfathers were before them in Italy. For years, Mexican-American leaders from the cities tried without success to instill that same kind of racial or ethnic pride in the Mexicans of the southwestern rural United States. Luis Valdez believes what is now happening in Delano is accomplishing what no prior effort in the Barrios ever did.
I think that very largely what the union, the huelga, and the whole movement has had to offer for the first time is something to fight for, rather than something to fight against. So many of the phony Mexican-American leaders have always been able to tell you what we're going to fight against, but they couldn't ever come out with the fours, you know. What are we going to fight for? A lot of them are confused on this issue. The term Mexican-American itself, I feel, is a very uncomfortable one, and I don't really like to use it. The one that we use in Spanish is not Mexican-Americans. We rarely refer to ourselves as Mexico-Americanos, you know, that's an Americanism, the term. We refer to ourselves as raza, you know, and I think the raza knows who the raza is.
It is obvious that Luis Valdez wants the raza not only to know who the other raza is, but who he is as well. Valdez is speaking, of course, of personal identity. When you look at Valdez, you see the history of his people in him. The fierce mustache, the stocky build, the intense emotions. And if you smile when you say it, you can even tell him that he's built close to the ground, close to the crops. He does not look like the sleepy, indolent, shuffling Jose that 20th Century Fox makeup men have created.
I keep seeing the same faces, you know, that I guess East L.A. actors, they come out as Mexicans in Hollywood movies, you know, and they come with a sombrero, the whole stereotype, you know. And it's fantastic, you know, the Mexican people have been in this area for 300 years. And yet we don't have not a single novel in English that describes the experience of the Mexican people in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so there must be, what's happened, you know? I've asked myself, what happened?
If the ranchers of Delano want to know what is happening east of Highway 99, they'll have to understand the fire that burns inside Luis Valdez.
See, I started school and I didn't know a word of English. There was also some freak accident. We were living in Early Mart, so 5 miles from here. And just at the time when I was really picking up language, about the third grade or so, we moved from Early Mart out into the country, what used to be Columbine Road. And there's an old school out there, Columbine School, which was full of grower sons. You know, the students were grower sons or foreman sons. And surprisingly enough, just, you know, 5 miles outside of a heavily Mexican town like Early Mart or a heavily Mexican town like Delano, at least this side of the tracks, this little school, this little country school, didn't have any Mexicans, and my brother and I were the only ones. So we were forced to speak English for, I think we went to school there 3 years. And that made a hell of a difference with us. Oh, we still had accents.
Accent and all, Luis Valdez has gone home to Delano. And there he's launched El Teatro Campesino. To the ranchers, El Teatro is the place that sends Mexicans out to the roadsides to perform these broad-stroke skits depicting El Patron as a greedy villain and Los Trabajadores as altruistic, clever serfs who are about to escape their bondage. Actually, El Teatro Campesino is much more. It has introduced music and drama and comedy and satire to the field workers. Just this past week, members of El Teatro were back in Newport at the Jazz Festival. They are performers.
Yeah, we've had some fantastic things just emerge, you know, and it's raw talent is what it is. It's never been used. It's never been tapped. Mm-hmm. All the growers have thought of them only as hands, you know, so many hands and arms working out in the fields and nothing more. And certainly the schools don't do very much to try to encourage this in people. You get a young farm worker kid, you know, going to school, and he tries to speak Spanish or tries to express himself, and they shut him up, you know, and they pigeonhole him and say, you got to be like this or that way. He loses interest, you know, he says, the hell with it. Before I know it, you know, he's grown up or settled down with a family, and he hasn't got a chance to develop.
Most Mexican kids in the San Joaquin Valley leave school before they graduate. There are a few books in the average farm worker home. Certainly no luxuries in the migrant camps. So as teenagers, the sons of the farm workers see a chance to earn some money in the fields.
I haven't been working for a long time, and I wanted something for myself, you know. So I told my father that I was going to quit school to get something for myself, but I told him if it works all right this year, that I was going to go back next year and graduate. That's the reason I dropped out.
Will you go back, do you think?
If it goes all right this year, I'll go back, but if it doesn't, I won't go back for next year.
There are those who say the Mexican of Central California does not have the same dreams for his children as other people do. Well, if that has been true, it is apparent this new revolution in Delano is changing that attitude.
I hope for them is a good education, and I hope they take a better road than we did, you know, starting out so young and getting married. I hope they wait and have, you know, a good job. Especially in town or anything, but not at the fields. I think it's very heavy. It's something that you suffer for the rest of your life because you just don't get out of the fields. You just you can't start anywhere else because you just don't have the education. You don't have experience. That's the first thing they ask, you know, any experience. And I just hope my children, when I send them to school and everything, that, you know, they'll start off better than what we did.
There are also those in Delano who will tell you the Mexican likes the migrant life, that he is one of life's tumbleweeds, and it is in his blood to move with the crops.
I've seen other people, that they come from other places and they just suffer a lot. You know, they can't find a home. Like, I do a student program, you know, a student program, that we go to the houses and visit them, and there's some house, there's one family that I visit, they have about 10 or 12 children, and they all live in one room. They don't have a kitchen or nothing. And we don't want to go, you know, just go from town to town. We just like it here.
The fire being set by people like Luis Valdez in Delano is indeed revolutionary, as the growers say. Luis Valdez is spreading discontent in Delano. He and Dolores Huerta and Caesar and Helen Chavez and others like them have returned to the vineyards to deliberately spark discord in the fields. They admit it. They concede. When they shout basta, they are saying to the grower, you have enough. When they cry esquiroles to those who remain in the field working, they are calling their brothers strikebreakers. And when they call huelga from the roadside, they are imploring others to put down their shovels and pruning shears and picking knives to join them in strike. To men like Bill Pirelli Minetti, it is nothing short of a land grab.
We've worked all our lives for what we have. We work now, and it hasn't been easy. And I think this is probably the way that the rest of the growers in the area have accumulated their property. It wasn't given to them, the government or anyone else. No one else came along and said, well, this is yours, you take it. They work, and they work hard, because they were smart and willing to work and willing to put out the effort, willing to take the gamble. Then somebody wants to come along later on after the gamble has been won and take it away from them. This isn't right.
There is an almost tragic quality to the Delano dispute. Not where it involves the big corporations with absentee owners who can rip out a vineyard or take a loss on it or sell it off, but where it involves men like Bill Pirelli Minetti and Jack Pandle and the others. The assault on what they and their fathers and their grandfathers have built is difficult for them to comprehend. To someone in the city, long used to management living with the fact that some of its employees will be hardworking while others will not, the fierce determination of the independent Delano ranchers may seem overreactive. But to one who has lived in the valley, it is not. A. Pirelli Minetti settled in Delano in 1924. Having come from the vineyards of Italy, it was natural that he would plant vines. With his sons Bill and Fred, he bought cheap grazing land. Water in abundance soon made the lands bloom, and in the spring, the tender green shoots of the Thompsons and the Alicantes and the Ribiers is something to see. A. Pirelli Minetti had first seen Delano in 1917, but didn't settle then, as his son Bill remembers.
When he came back in the early 20s, he saw the possibilities here, and although it was during Prohibition, and he just felt that someday Prohibition would be repealed, and if it did, well, he wanted to be in an area where grapes could be raised profitably, and he felt this was an opportunity. Land was available. It was pasture land, grazing land. That's all it was being used for at the time. So he made the investment that was necessary, and we started from there.
Today, the sons of A. Pirelli Minetti own just 500 acres of grapes, a small vineyard by Delano standards. But the vermouth and the wines that they produce at their winery are world famous. There are hundreds of men like Fred Pirelli Minetti in the San Joaquin Valley, the sons of Italian immigrants, who have not only continued the vineyardist tradition of their fathers, but have learned new methods and new techniques and have improved on it. The yield of an acre of vines today would have stunned their fathers. The Italian growers of Delano have Yugoslav neighbors, men like Jack Pandle. A strong, husky man, Pandle has the look of one who stays near the soil. He may fly his twin-engined airplane to San Francisco for a weekend, but you sense he'll be anxious to get away from the tall buildings and the traffic and the strangeness of the city as quickly as he can. The Yugoslavia his parents came from was pre-Tito, pre-communist. And he hates the communists passionately and is sure that communists from the outside have helped the strikers. His love for what America has been to him and to his family is immense. Jack Pandle may tell you there are years when a worker makes more than he does, but if you ask him why then doesn't he sell the acreage, he gives it expression.
This area here, we will never cry. And I've always said that God has been good to us, the community has been good to us, and we in turn have been good to our employees.
There are many men like Jack Pandle in Delano. While their fathers may have voted for Democrats, you go away with the feeling that the sons have left that party or that it has left them. They talk about socialism and big government and controls and intervention as enemies of a way of life. They and their fathers made it, they'll tell you. Why can't a Mexican and his kid make it? Rancher John Bree of Delano is among the most articulate and educated of the growers. He calls the Chavez Teamster Union jurisdictional settlement an unholy alliance that could strangle the nation if truck drivers joined with field workers in refusing to move food to market. And you sense he isn't convinced that Washington would do anything to prevent it. John Bree will also tell you that after the DiGiorgio Company signed with Chavez, thousands of acres of vines were torn out of production by DiGiorgio, and so he asks, what did the strikers gain? And John Bree will tell you that mechanization is coming, if not to table grapes, then to many of the other valley specialty crops. And you've seen for yourself the thousands of acres of new almond trees in the once useless hills outside Delano. Automatically irrigated, these trees will bear fruit that will be shaken off by machines, picked by machines, and no man will touch them from farm to packing shed. John Bree is the grandson of an attorney who came west and bought land. He has gone to college, and he has degrees. And he has returned to the land in Delano, just as Cesar Chavez has. Bree talks about prices and wages and incentives and costs. But if you probe deeply enough, you can get him to talk about people and strikers and tomorrow.
What is the society, especially in California, going to do when agriculture is mechanized to the point where hundreds of thousands of farm laborers are going to be cut loose? What are you going to do with these people, by and large? Now, this is absolutely no reflection on the man himself, but the majority of them are uneducated. The majority of them are unskilled, except at farm labor. I call them skilled labor, and they are highly skilled, because if I were to take you out in that field, you couldn't do it. It takes a long time to learn to do these jobs. So they are skilled workers for agriculture, but they're not for industry. And if I take that job away from them, what are you going to do? Kern County has an $81 million budget this year. $32 million of it goes to welfare. Now, how much more are you going to afford? How much more can you afford to pay and I afford to pay? I don't know. I'm not saying here's the black hand of death coming down on you. All I'm saying is this is the problem that's going to arise. And what are we going to do about it?
And so the world of John Bree and the Pirelli Minettis and Jack Pantle are on a collision course with the world of Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta and Luis Valdez. The outcome of their conflict will not only affect their lives, but those of farmers and farm workers throughout the land. This is the importance of Delano. It is simply the spot fate has chosen for what was surely an inevitable confrontation. It is for time and history to decide which side is right. Meanwhile, one wonders, did the Delano grape strike really begin 25 years ago when Cesar Chavez sat down in a movie theater in Delano only to be told by an usher and a policeman to move to the Mexican side of the theater? Did it start when a field worker's son accidentally got into the school out on Columbine Road where the growers' sons went, where differences in clothes and lunch buckets could be seen and where inspiration set in? Or is the Delano grape strike of 1967 merely the harvest of seeds planted long ago when someone yelled Cholo at a Mexican boy? The ranchers of Delano are sure the alien ideas that they read in the strike newspaper El Malcriado and that they hear from 102 Albany Street weren't learned in Delano, at least not on the east side of Highway 99. So each man must judge for himself where Luis Valdez, who symbolizes the strike leaders, was taught.
I object to the implication, you know, that I've been formed, you know, I've been propagandized or trained by foreign elements. As a matter of fact, everything that happened, that's inspired me, has happened right here. There were the 16th of September celebrations right here in Delano when I was a kid. Pictures of Pancho Villa and Zapata talking of independence and liberty. Of course, you'd believe it. You'd think this is what Americans want. This is what Americans strive for. Certainly, these are things that the Constitution and Declaration of Independence talk about. But there are a lot of people that don't. They pay lip service to this and turn around and try to stamp you out if you act in reality to achieve these things. And farm workers have been oppressed. And I know because I was a farm worker, because my people have been farm workers. The last 40 years they've been in this country. Since the Mexican Revolution, when they came across looking for a better life. Only when one of us farm workers, one of us Mexican Americans, one of us Filipinos, Negroes, or poor whites gets a little bit too articulate, then these people that are against us say, well, this one must have been trained because he hasn't got the brains to be able to come up with it himself. He hasn't got the brains to be able to figure out what liberty or democracy is all about, so he must have been propagandize in some secret place. This is a lot of bull. I learned what democracy, what freedom, what human dignity is all about because they try to take it away from me right here in these fields.
Written and narrated by Jim Zalian, sound technician Tom Goodwin. Now, this is Steve Allison. The story of Delano is a rapidly changing one. Just today, KBC learned exclusively that a settlement is imminent in the Pirelli-Minetti situation. The Pirelli-Minetti brothers were the only growers in Delano to have signed with the Teamsters Union to represent their field hands. KBC has learned that Pirelli-Minetti is expected to announce later this week that it will allow the Teamsters out of that contract and Chavez Union will move in. Now, this is significant in that while the Pirelli-Minettis are not strictly growers, they have a winery which produces boycottable brand name products, they fall somewhere in between the typical independent rancher and the big Schenley-type firms. Now, you can ask questions about that situation and others with our guests sitting beside me tonight. John Bree, a Delano rancher, and the Reverend Chris Hartmeyer of the Migrant Ministry. Both will be on with me after the news to respond to your questions and mine. Our phone number is Upton 07263. Before we get with our guests, let's find out what's happening all over. And there's Lou Cook.
And this is KABC AM, the news and conversation station of Los Angeles.